What's up? Welcome to Sweathead. My name is Mark Pollard. I've got Tom Beck. He's the executive director of SODA, S-O-D-A. That's the Society of Digital Agencies. He's run an agency, but Tom is an incredibly useful person to talk to about the state of digital agencies. SODA is a collective of pretty high-performing digital agencies from around the world. They set a high standard, a high benchmark for the kinds of agencies that they can get in, and then they try to support the founders and the leaders of these agencies with intelligence, research, and mentorship so that they can build flourishing businesses. Welcome, Tom Beck.
Thank you, Mark. I'm happy to be here. It's a real pleasure.
Look, you've been in this role for some time now. What is going on with the state of digital agencies?
Man, the state of digital agencies, I think, is a little bit all over the place right now. But if I could summarize it in just a couple points, small and mid-sized digital agency market, you know, you're seeing them wrestle with their identity as digital agencies. Everyone is digital now to some extent. So the notion of being differentiated based on the fact that you're a digital agency is no longer as strong of a proposition as it was a decade ago. 10 years ago, it was simple enough to say, we're a digital agency. And clients and others in the market would go, oh, I see why you're different. That's no longer the case. That distinction is disappearing. So digital agencies are wrestling with kind of how they position themselves, what their incarnation in the marketplace is. Another piece is digital agencies are struggling with or wrestling with how specialized to be versus, you know, how broad and full service. There was a big push over the last 5 or 6 years for many, I would call them sort of native digital agencies or natively founded digital agencies to continue to be more and more full service agencies. They thought that was their path to growth. They thought that was their path to relevance. And I think with so much competition in the marketplace, we're seeing a swing back at least a little bit to some aspects of specialization. And then the last piece I would say is digital agencies are struggling with all the other broad kind of industry and economic factors that other agencies are struggling with: pricing pressure, finding great talent, rising costs for talent, moving quickly and executing quickly in a market where clients demand everything now. And so digital agencies, I think, are struggling with that just like any other agency flavor. Mm-hmm. So those would be a couple things top of mind, but obviously it's a complex world right now.
Okay. I mean, if you think about some of the agencies, I won't name check agencies because, I mean, they're all your babies in some bizarre uncle. You're an uncle to a lot of agencies. And so I won't get you to name check any unless you choose to and put you under that kind of pressure. When you think about the past 20 years or so of digital agencies, can you call out a handful of phases of the types of work they were doing, the types of shapes that they took, how they talked about themselves? What comes to mind?
Gosh, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, in terms of phases and shapes, I think, gosh, and someone should do this. The eras of digital agencies would probably be a good infographic. But I think that, you know, essentially the first phases of digital agencies, you know, were web design companies. I mean, that's really, really what they were. And for the SODA community in particular, since we were always focused on a sort of high caliber of creative excellence and maybe innovation, at least in terms of the experiences that were being created. Just to say, in the early days of SODA, they were essentially the best flash web design companies out there. But that was, you know, phase one, I think, was focused very heavily on web design. And this is desktop web design. You know, phase two started to layer in more marketing and advertising to that. So rather than just doing web design, things like digital advertising and media planning and email marketing and SEO and SEM were starting to get rolled into kind of the general digital agency model. You know, at that same time, things like mobile started growing up, and there were agencies. I mean, all through this, agencies are either adding these kinds of capabilities or starting to specialize in particular areas. But I think phase two is this kind of notion of growth in services and move towards becoming more full service. We'll call them digital marketing agencies rather than just web design companies. You know, phase three, I think, looked at these agencies then continuing to expand into broader, even strategic and consulting roles within the digital channel. So not only just digital marketing, but now we're looking at things like customer experience design, some aspects of strategic consulting around digital investments. And that's been this push towards, you know, more and more kind of full service models for digital agencies. And I would say, depending on your vantage point, trying to work their way up the value chain, so to speak. So becoming a little bit more strategically focused rather than just, we'll call it, web design production focused. So that would be, I would say those would be three large, and I think we're in phase three right now, where there's this mad rush amongst advertising agencies, traditional agencies, consultancies, digital agencies to talk about sort of who owns the customer experience strategy. Things like digital transformation are very much woven into that, and trying to sort of work their way up to the C-suite buyers to say, hey, we may be a digital agency, but we're kind of the strategic partner that can drive your business. And then I guess, again, last point is along the way, areas of specialization have always played a role. You know, so it went from, you know, specialization around search advertising to broader digital advertising and digital media planning to things like mobile, things like experiential or physical digital installations to voice right now is growing immensely. And so we see agencies popping up that are focused just on designing and building sort of voice-based interactive experiences. So those kind of specializations along the way, I think, always feed into the evolution, but also feed into agencies that are becoming, quote, more and more full service.
So with all that choice, there's obviously a lot of dabbling because, you know, you have to experiment with what people will buy from you, what clients will buy from you. And sometimes that becomes the thing, you know, especially after the collapse of Flash, a lot of agencies had to look at themselves and go, oh, are we going to move more into digital product, more into still kind of the early days of social media? You know, I think within a year or two of Flash collapsing, that's when social exploded.
Yeah.
Or do we want to mimic more the advertising agencies or start to wear fancy clothes and act like business consultants or, you know, be like some of the really small, innovative shops playing with experimental technology and doing it for experiential work often in museums and for stunts. If you think about some of the false steps, without naming names unless you want to, but without naming names, what were some of the false steps that you think some agencies now realize that they took?
The false steps vary by agency, but I mean, I'll speak of a false sense from my own agency. I was helping to run an agency called Enlighten for many years. We sold the agency at the end of 2015, but we were kind of a typical part of that agency evolution where, you know, we were essentially a great web design company. And then strategically, we decided that we wanted to grow by building digital advertising capabilities. We built a social marketing practice. We had a search marketing practice. And while that helped us to some extent in the market, I mean, we were working to become a full service digital agency. While that helped us to some extent in the market, the core ethos of the agency was built more around experience design and kind of tinkering with digital technology and using it in interesting ways. And I would say that the heart and soul of the company was not an advertising or marketing company. You know, I wouldn't call it a false step because I think strategically it was a helpful move for the business. Culturally, I think it was a tougher move for the business because a lot of people that worked at our company didn't identify themselves in that way. And I use that as an anecdote because I see that happening. I see a number of agencies, you know, in the soda community, but just broadly speaking, starting to roll back a little bit from this notion of, we need to be a full service agency who does design and development and strategic planning, and we do media and we do content and we do advertising and we do promotional programs. And I think that they're doing that for two reasons. One, you know, there's the simple answer, which it's hard to be really good at all of that. But two, I think more agencies are swinging back into the things that really drive them and that they really love, because they realize that's one of the ingredients for being successful. So I think that's one of the, I would say, false steps that I've seen is over that last 5 years is loads of native kind of digital agencies moving into aspects of marketing and advertising that were not a good fit for them.
Yeah, I've seen that. And when I talk to people who run these agencies, and often it's about how do we get strategy to work here? And the more agencies that I've been in, I'm like, well, first of all, do you really, really need it? You know, why are you doing it? And if your answer is just to get access to bigger budgets and different types of scopes, that's a valid answer. But you could bring in strategy people and they'll just flame and you could destroy the people. But also they need, it's better, I think, now to build a strategy group, for example, around what you already are. So that if you're in video production and you want to do strategy, bring a couple of people in, but maybe make sure that they're doing strategy through video. So there's some continuation between the core skills and the new skills. And cultures don't stretch. And I've seen a lot of small agencies bring in new groups of people. And all of a sudden, an 80-person agency has 8 to 10 people in a meeting for a $200,000 project. And in that meeting are people from the different departments. It's too many people. I think beyond two or three different subcultures within a culture gets very, very difficult. Can I ask you a couple of questions about bringing in new disciplines to these kinds of agencies? What are some of the challenges you hear as far as bringing in strategy?
Yeah, so bringing in strategy, here would be a couple of quick thoughts. Is strategy doesn't fit the challenges where it plugs into the process and kind of what its role really is in shaping decisions. Many of these agencies are already sort of creatively driven, and the creative groups tend to believe that they sort of drive the strategy, and so that the strategy becomes a sort of nice little justification on top of the work that's already being done, you know, and that's kind of a recipe for failure. Piece two, as you've pointed out, is what kind of strategy? So that's a massive, massive mistake that most places who are building a strategic capability are making, is they don't even know what the hell kind of strategy they're doing. Is this business strategy? Is it channel planning strategy? Is it communication strategy? Is it digital experience strategy? Is it strategy, as you pointed out, for a particular kind of production, you know, project? Because it can't be all of that. But people tend to use strategy so broadly that it's, you know, oh, anything that's sort of smart business-like thinking on top of this idea we're already proposing, that's strategy, which is, of course, you know, bullshit, and creates massive problems for a strategy group to function effectively within an agency.
I obviously agree with that second one. It's difficult. And I've been in interviews, you know, in my mid-20s, I remember interviewing with a head of strategy in Australia, one of the most creative places there. And it was for a digital strategist role, which I was always on the fence about. And his first question was, what is digital strategy? And it wasn't a trick question. But what I love about your first answer is, we go from culture to the word identity. And I think a lot of agency leaders are relatively good at talking about culture, whether or not it's true, but they don't always talk about identity. And when you bring in new people or new skill sets, you're affecting people's identity. And you can't just say, well, we've got great culture, because you need to understand that when you bring in these new people, they have to slightly adjust their identity because they're going to have to behave differently. And I don't think that gets talked about a lot.
I agree. I agree entirely. And that's part of the magic of what can make a really successful agency work, is everyone understanding sort of where they fit and where they play within that culture. And certainly having a common respect, and even beyond respect, a sort of common love of working with one another and what each contributes. And I think if you can't evolve those identities, as you've put out, then it's just a box on an org chart.
What are some of the challenges when a digital agency brings in a creative department? I don't really like the phrase traditional creatives, but what I mean by that is copywriters or art directors, or even technologists who have worked in an advertising agency. What are some of the challenges they face when they bring those types of people into what has essentially been a creative but production shop?
I would say from my perspective, I've often seen that just the processes can be quite different. So many times I call them a native digital agency. And by that, I simply mean, an agency that sort of started their life focused exclusively on digital. But I think that digital agencies tended to be a little flatter hierarchically than many traditional agencies in terms of, technologists might be at the table, UX people might be at the table kind of thinking through an idea. And I view that generally speaking as a positive thing. And what I've often seen, and again, caveat accepted on what traditional means, but we'll just use it for the purposes of simplicity. But many traditional creatives, even when we brought them into our own agency, had more of an expectation that they were sort of the sole driver of the creative idea, that creative process, and that they created these sort of artifacts, whether it's a script or a storyboard or whatever the case is, around which everything else was built. And in the digital agency world, it doesn't really happen that way. I think it's more inherently collaborative. It's inherently a little bit more messy. Traditional creatives can sometimes struggle in that environment. And the last bit I'd add on that is, and this is obviously less true today than it was a few years ago, but honestly, if you don't fundamentally understand at least a little bit about how the technology works that you're proposing your ideas for, it's tough to be a successful creative without having some understanding of the constraints and opportunities of the medium in which you're operating.
Mm-hmm. I can see a lot of faces that have experienced some of this from all sides. So first of all, there's the creative ego and how that relates to hierarchy and status, and how those things also lead to some kind of assumed process, which is different in a digital agency, where a lot of people who grew up on the internet, they were nerds and they didn't like hierarchy and they didn't like alphas, honestly. And the cool thing about the internet is you could be anything. And if you did good stuff, people would pay attention to it. And I think that was definitely in the first 20 years of the digital agency culture. And I'm sure it's changing now. And then you add, yes, what you talked about with understanding and knowledge of technology, and not just like, hey, we can do this cool thing with this new technology because it would look good in a portfolio, but because people will use it. So I think sometimes there's a chasm for people who've worked in the advertising world who go to digital, that they now have to pay much more attention to humans and how they're going to use something. And the final one that I'm curious to get your take on as well is, we talked about type of strategy. There's also type of idea. A lot of digital agencies are more in the world of tactics and interaction and user experience, and not necessarily in the high concept world. And I'm being overly simplistic. I don't mean it as a condemnation of anyone, right? And also they'll sometimes bring in someone who they think is going to do what I would call high concept work, and they actually are more of a tagline or script writer. So I think understanding the type of creative brain that an agency needs is also important. Do you agree, disagree with any of that?
Yeah, I do agree with that. I think that there's a broad spectrum of kind of what, we won't even say what constitutes a creative mind, right? Because everyone's got a creative mind to some extent. But if we just look at the creative discipline, I think there's a massive distinction between, someone who's coming up with a campaign idea, which might just essentially be, to your point, it could be a clever tagline, or it could be a clever stunt or interaction mechanism, or a clever way to position something. There's a difference between that kind of idea versus, a kind of transactional idea or very focused idea that could be based on a segmentation strategy that's going to drive a particular target. That's a totally different kind of idea. I mean, I think an idea that might be a new way for a business to act or to talk about themselves or sort of contextualize what it is that they do and believe in, that's a totally different idea. Today, more what we're seeing, especially with digital agencies who've started to move into kind of the digital product direction, is ideas based fundamentally on maybe we can drive more revenue or maybe we can drive higher customer satisfaction by creating new tools and utilities or ways of interacting that we haven't done in the past. And these aren't necessarily meant to be marketing concepts as much as they're meant to be, call them digital product and digital experience enhancements that can actually have a real impact on the financial performance of the business. Again, to your starting supposition, I mean, that's a broad spectrum of, quote, ideas that might come out of an agency. And there's very different thinkers who think those kinds of thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about bringing in user experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, user experience, I think in many digital agencies for sure has fought their way higher up the food chain,
What are some of the challenges?
I think it depends a little bit on the legacy or the genesis of the particular agency. But I do think that many UX disciplines and practices still don't or didn't have the same, say, status as an interface designer or, say, you know, the creative technologist who's sort of driving some of the implementation. And that, you know, UX as a discipline sometimes can be thought about in too reductive of a fashion. You know, i.e. it's like, go ahead and map some user flows, map some business requirements for how this kind of interface is going to function. You know, essentially it's like, create some of the blueprints. You're like the sketch person who takes the architect's ideas, you know, and by architect, and I mean in the physical world, you know, mm-hmm. whoever had the really sexy idea for what the thing is going to be, you UX person, you go in and like spec out how it's going to actually be built. Mm. And I think that that's too reductive for many. Going back to what you just said about a creative mind, I think a UX mind or a UX idea is starting to exhibit some of that same spectrum as mm-hmm. kind of a creative idea, is that there's now a broad range of UX types, some that actually are most comfortable in that world of like specification. And it's super important, particularly on large design and build projects. I mean, it can make the difference of millions of dollars if it's done right. Like, that's really not an exaggeration. Yeah. That's one end of the spectrum. And then on the top end of the spectrum, I mean, I think that UX strategists are, you know, essentially, you know, the best of them can embody sort of the best of a strategist, the best of a kind of a visual customer experience designer, and the best of a technical architect and a technical lead that can sort of embody all three of those disciplines and be a really important part of any team. Mm-hmm.
So I'll ask you a question, but I'll state my belief first. Mm-hmm. I believe that anyone doing work that's very, very, very much majority is about trying to understand people should be in one group. I would call it a strategy group or humanities, whatever you want to call it. So I believe, and I did UX for 10 years, but I believe that UX and strategy and data analytics should all be under the one house. I have seen chief creative officers and ECDs who had nothing to do with digital scramble to get UX because they were worried about the dwindling creative departments. In what kinds of departments do you see UX in the agencies that are part of SODA?
That's a great question, and I think it continues to evolve. And I'll give you my first answer, and one having played with this in our own agency, is that structurally, I don't think it matters where they sit. But that's more of a function of, can you run your agency with sort of a clear sense of who does what, how they do it, and how teams collaborate. And if you can do that effectively, then the notion of which department a particular function sits in doesn't mean as much, in my opinion. We had UX as a standalone practice. We had UX as part of strategy. We had UX as part of the design and creative team all over the course of, say, 8 years. And I honestly don't think that one of them, structurally speaking, worked more effectively than the other. What was most important is making sure that UX played a really critical role in a role of sort of connective tissue between the ideas of strategy, between the customer experience that was being envisioned, and then the practicality of how that was going to be executed from a technical perspective. So if you looked at those three, technology, strategy, and creative disciplines, UX had to be the connective tissue between all three of them. So where they sit in the organization, I don't think they can necessarily do it more effectively from one place or the other, but they have to have a role in all three of those disciplines.
Interesting. And I guess what I'm building on is the supposition, do you like that word, that the original digital agencies I was part of in the 1990s tended to be built around designers, developers mm-hmm. and producers.
Yes.
Where producers, we did the user experience and the information architecture. We managed the client, we managed the team, we managed the finances, and we did the strategy, because it was no, really wasn't a thing as a strategist. And I want to ask you about producers in a second. What about when agencies bring in data and analytics? What are some of the challenges they face?
Similar to this, you know, the strategy discussion we just had, but in terms of many agencies, from a mindset perspective, are not quantitatively driven. They'll say they are, you know, oh, we love data, we use data, yada, yada, yada. You know, the reality is that many agencies, at least that I've seen, sure, they'll use data to help rationalize ideas. But a lot of that becomes sort of the wrapping paper around the idea and not necessarily foundational to the idea itself. So first and foremost, I don't see many agencies that are fundamentally quantitative in nature. So first and foremost, there's just how do we deal with this function and capability? The bigger piece beyond that is just the where does data play a role? And then the sort of influence of that data. Does that data actually drive decisions? Does the analytics team actually have a role in shaping the decisions? Or are they more of like, oh, we're kind of a consultant on the side. We throw some numbers at you, designer, strategist, creative lead, whomever it might be. We throw some numbers at you humbly for your consideration as you come up with an idea. You know, versus, you know, an analytics team that's actually empowered to really fundamentally help drive ideas based on what they're finding in terms of performance. So, and then the last piece I would say is that I think a lot of people are still struggling with like the best way to get, you know, the right data into that decision-making process. So, you know, a designer might say, hey, I'm designing a new interface and I'd love some data on the last 8 times we've done, say, this kind of shopping cart experience. Like, what have been the results? Have they been successful? What worked? What didn't work? And oftentimes, there's either a gap in getting that data to that designer, or there's just a sort of time lag or a relevance lag in sort of getting to them in a way that can actually shape the work they're doing.
And that's such a riddle, because anyone who's been around data for a while and who respects it and who appreciates the creative uses of it will usually say it's not just about having the data, it's about having the right answers, right questions to get the data right. So that's a riddle there.
I'll just add to that, because I couldn't agree more. We would struggle with this notion of, you know, we would say fundamentally reporting on data is one function. Deriving insights from that data is an entirely different function. And I think if you can't do the latter, i.e. really produce some insights, and those insights can just be hypotheses, but if you can't produce insights, you're just fundamentally, it's not even data and analytics, you're just producing reports.
Okay, last one. What about bringing in account management? What are some of the challenges that the agencies face?
Yep, great question. And again, this is something that, going back to even your earlier question of where have some digital agencies overstepped and or needed to course correct, and I would say that account management is one of those functions. You know, as digital agencies became more kind of full service partners to their clients, not just building a one-off website, but, you know, running and executing digital marketing programs and campaigns, et cetera, felt like, oh, we have to have account management. You know, that's the way the agency model's always worked. And many of them have gone in that direction. Some have been successful, others haven't. Challenge number one is fundamentally a business model and a sort of compensation model challenge. Most digital agencies have always worked on a project basis, in not necessarily a retainer or any sort of headcount model that might factor particular headcount into the contract from the get-go. So first and foremost, there's always been a challenge of where do you bill for your account manager's hours, especially when you've already got a project manager and a producer and a strategist and other people doing these roles. So billability becomes a challenge for account managers. Some agencies try to solve that by saying, okay, the model for account managers is a hybrid one. You know, they're less billable than a typical production resource, but they're also then expected to help sell and grow accounts, you know? And so we sort of rationalize it that way. But piece one is just, I think, figuring out financially where account managers sit within a project-based structure. Once you get beyond that, then there is, I do think that there's still a fundamental role distinction that can be challenging across, and I'll put it across those, that sort of triangle of account manager, project manager, producer, and strategist. And you could throw in even a biz dev lead if that's, you know, resident within that particular agency. But I think if you have strong performing functions in those other categories, like you have great project managers and great producers, and you've got great strategists, and you've got someone from a very high level, like a biz dev person who helped manage the relationship, it's harder to figure out, like, where is the account manager adding value? Just last thought on this is, you know, going back to your comment that you made earlier is, you know, it's easy to wind up with a team structure that, you know, you find yourself with 10 people in the room for every meeting, just because that's the number of disciplines that you have. And I think, at least in the digital agency world, a certain number are questioning where, if and where account management actually needs to fit in for what they do. And I think that there's cases where it works well, and then there's cases where digital agencies have now started to swing back and say, like, I don't think that account management adds enough value for essentially how we run our projects and how we structure our projects financially.
Yeah, and I would add a few things to that. One, the first thing is cultural, and I think sometimes the account management group can get looked at as a bunch of people who talk, who are extroverted and don't often follow up. And sometimes they misunderstand the flat nature of many digital agencies and assume a large agency, if they came from one, a large agency power dynamic, and people can feel very patronized. So that's something to keep an eye on. The second one, I think, is a technical challenge where sometimes they, well, hopefully they don't speak about things that they don't know about, but sometimes they might misscope things or misspeak in meetings. And then the third one is identity, in that account management, when it comes into a digital agency, can immediately, it will immediately affect the producers.
Oh yeah.
Who will say, hang on, do I ever get to see my client ever again? And that leads me on to the producer. I do think, at least what I saw in Sydney in the 1990s, producers were really involved with so much stuff. And I don't know if it's because of when I moved to America, I don't know if it's because the projects can be really big and therefore require a lot of specialists. But I also had, you know, people who've joined some of the agencies at Soda who were producers in Australia in the past few years. And they would often catch up with me and say, man, I used to do such varied projects back home, and here they just want me to produce an email. Well, that's all. I'm an email producer. you know, especially if in some of the larger digital agencies. How do you see the role of producers in digital agencies changing over the past 20 years?
That's a funny anecdote. It's sort of a painful one too, though, to think about the fact that there are agencies where producers produce emails. But it is undoubtedly true. So again, you know, man, like many of these disciplines we've been discussing, Mark, I think that there's been a little bit of a trajectory, and then, you know, now, at least in some places, a little bit of a course correction. You know, trajectory one was, to your point, I think many people in the production role in the early days, and this was even true, I would say, in the U.S. in the late 90s, that most of the producers would have come from, like, say, some sort of multimedia production roles, where they were, to your point, they were true leads on the business. They were managing the client, they were managing the teams, they were managing the financials of the project. They might be doing aspects of the strategy. They knew the technology and the implementation well, and that's an incredibly valuable skill set. Projects, as it became bigger and more complicated, it was tougher to do that all within a single person. Account management, I think, was one of the solutions people attempted to do, but didn't always work. I think that so does a unique beast in this regard, because we still have a number of our members are, they're very successful, very sought after digital production companies and sort of digital innovation companies. And they still are structured along that fundamental production model where the producer and the executive producers are very influential within the agency and play a really, really critical role in kind of driving projects and driving project success. So it's certainly true in digital agencies that I would say tend to call themselves more digital production companies. I definitely see that is true in some of the more niche agencies like experiential agencies who are doing physical digital installation work, kind of that the role of production and producer is more akin to kind of what you were referencing in the 90s. And then I think that agencies that have gone a little more in the direction of, say, consultancy, or gone a little more in the direction of digital product studio, or have gone more in the direction of digital marketing campaign, kind of relationship management mode, that those producers really are it's more project management, isolated within time, budget, delivery aspects of the project. So I think a little bit of a spectrum depending on what kind of digital agency you are. That's what I'm seeing with where the kind of producer and production role sits.
To add some words, but hopefully also to paraphrase. So to some degree, the account manager came in to solve the challenge of many digital agencies just being on this up and down project fee-based life. Mm-hmm. And they were brought in because sometimes, producers would manage to scope not to relationship and didn't always get additional business opportunities. And then project managers were brought in when the projects became much more about business transformation, deeper, more complex, maybe 30, 40, 50 people and multiple company departments on a project. So they came in to solve for that. Yeah, I see that. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's a perfect summary though is. And so I think just to put a punctuation mark on it is production and the role of producer is a really, really high value skill set, particularly in digital production companies, agencies who are making really sort of innovative experiences. And that I think that like a lot of our members would say that an excellent producer is still kind of a unicorn skill set, just as much as an excellent strategist or an excellent designer. But in those particular kinds of agencies, to your point, and you go in the direction of a consultancy or a digital marketing agency that's more like an advertising agency, I think the role of production is or producer is different expectation.
It's funny because in the 1990s hip-hop world, a producer was someone who made the beats. They had the samples, they had the sampler, they made the music. And in other parts of the music industry, a producer could be hands-on, but often they might have just made some quote-unquote creative contribution and they might have had some power and their contribution could have been meddling, but people kind of had to give them some kind of credit just so that they would make connections happen or help fund it. And then the digital producer really, really made things happen. And I just wonder whether in some respects over 10 years that the digital producer was forced to disappear into a smaller role that was really just about calendar invitations and getting people to turn up to a room, when my favorite digital producers have intellectual skin in the game. You want them in the room because they're going to make the ideas better. They're going to suggest ideas while also respecting, you know, everyone else's sensitivities. Maybe that's the unicorn. That's the unicorn that I imagine when you talk.
That's the unicorn. But again, throwing out names, if we look at some of our member companies who are focused, you know, they're still really in that model of production in that they're sought after to make something incredible. This could be a Jam 3, they're based in Toronto, or Tool of North America, or Resin in New Zealand, or some of our experiential agencies like Hush in New York. I mean, in these companies, the producer is what you've described. I mean, they're a highly valued, critical contributor to the overall project.
Okay. Is or has the word production ever been a dirty word with the agencies with whom you work?
So yes, absolutely. I would say with the exception of a couple. So production, was kind of, you know, Mark, I would say it's kind of like when a digital agency in the early days was a web design company, you know, and realistically we were often just called that in the early days. We weren't called digital agencies. We were called, oh, it's a web design company. And then there became a point where being called a web design company felt too narrow, you know, felt too diminutive, felt too reductive for sort of what it was. So we didn't want to be called a web design company anymore. We were a digital agency, which implied something bigger. I think production has gone through that, like a little bit of that similar soul searching, where companies who were production companies, that primarily meant in the digital space that, well, most of our work comes through other agency partners. So we're not, you don't work directly with the client. We're brought in by an agency partner to make an idea that they've already proposed, or to make an idea better, or to execute an idea that they have, but they don't have the capabilities. So that notion of production often sort of implied that there's not a direct-to-client relationship. And so a number of production companies kind of ran away from that labeling as production. Again, that's swinging back in that it's twofold. One, with the rise of kind of in-house digital teams at the client side, they're more and more keen to work directly with the production company than use another agency who's just an intermediary or a broker to the great talent that they want. So the notion of a production company now that directly serves the client is much more prevalent than it was a couple years ago. And two, I'd say one of the most the most famous, at least in our membership, who never ever walked away from the term production is Media Monks, based in Amsterdam. And, you know, just had a very high profile acquisition by Sir Martin Sorrell's S4 Capital Group. They were bought for something like $150 million. And Wesley and Victor, the two founders, they founded 17 years ago. They always thought production was a glorious word. You know, they're like, that's what we do. We build really great shit and we call it production and we love it. And we think that everyone needs a great production company. And they've stayed true to that vision from the beginning, when they were, like other production companies, only working on behalf of other agencies, you know, to serve their clients, to today where, you know, Media Monk still calls themselves a production company, but, you know, 90%+ of their work and revenue comes directly from clients, you know, who hire them as a production company and a, you know, a digital experience innovation company.
It's so interesting. It's funny how the word games that we all play on ourselves to make ourselves feel better. But the last question is, for someone who is in a digital agency, you hang out with a lot of their bosses, a lot of the people who created these businesses, usually from nothing. What could you teach the people listening about the people running their agencies?
I guess, a couple pieces of advice. One is that, and this would be true of any founder and owner, and it doesn't matter if it's a digital agency, but I think that employees, and generally speaking, younger employees, underestimate the sort of the pressure in the burden under which owners and founders are under. And it's not, look, most of the founders that I know, they're not driven entirely by financial success. You know, I mean, of course, that's important, and it's more important to some than others, but they love what they do, and they're trying to create a company and a culture that also takes care of people. And there's hundreds of factors that they have to weigh on any given day and in any given situation to try to balance that. You know, we need a successful company that can pay people. You know, we need a company that does good work that we're proud of. We need good clients who we admire and respect and can help. All those sort of things. So piece number one is, I think owners and founders have, just put it this way, they have a lot on their minds, and any decision that comes from them that might seem simple to you as an employee, or you might be able to view through a single lens. I'd say just have a little bit of empathy and appreciation that there's usually 100 other factors that they're trying to balance in that particular decision. The other piece, I think, for owners and founders is that, but I mean, particularly the ones within my community, is that I think they're trying their best to figure out, how can we make a decent living, you know, for our teams, and do work that we're really proud of, and that we, you know, that we feel like as human beings move us forward, and we're excited to do it. That's always a balance, right? So people are take work and projects that they don't always love because they need to pay the bills. But I think fundamentally, a lot of owners and founders, it's like that's really what they're trying to work towards, and they're trying their best to sort of create an environment that they can be financially viable enough, but also do work that they feel like is a little bit more profound than just selling another widget.
Tom, I think this was really useful, and it was awesome tracking the history of the digital agencies. I think I was 19 when I first appeared in one, and lots of good memories. It was such an amazing time, and it feels like a bit of a shit show out there for a lot of people that I know. And I know also that the agencies in Soda, they do have a strong creative compass, and they're trying to do stuff without sort of flailing everywhere and just chasing any wind that appears. And so thank you for joining us on Sweathead today, man.
Yeah, no, thank you again. It was my pleasure and my privilege. So thanks for having me, Mark. I appreciate it.
Peace.